There are regions of the world that scientists have dubbed blue zones, areas where people enjoy extraordinary longevity, living to more than 100. These blue zone residents have much less disease than their fellow citizens. Blue zones include Sardinians in Italy, Icarians in Greece, Okinawans in Japan, and Seventh-day Adventists in Loma Linda, California. That's right, America has its very own blue zone. And on today's show, we'll discover what specific factors give Seventh-day Adventists significantly less disease and more life than other Americans. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. The close community of Seventh-day Adventists living in Loma Linda, California, have long enjoyed the health benefits of their chosen lifestyle. But then so have Seventh-day Adventists all over the world. They don't just live longer, they live better. On today's show, we're off to Loma Linda to find out the secrets to their longevity. We'll begin with Herb, one of our amazing centenarians. Catch this.
How old am I? I'm 102. I keep breathing. That's important. Yes. Well, I am a vegetarian. I imagine that's more what you would need to hear. And I think that has contributed considerably to my good health. I've not always been a Seventh-day Adventist, but I am now and happy to be. My wife and I were baptized together back in 1939. It's a while ago, yeah. Wow. Well, I feel that I'm very blessed. In comparison, I see so many. I remember when I was volunteering at St. Helena Hospital, that's here in California, I was involved in bringing people in from the street into the hospital. And it just was amazing to me to see how people in their 70s were so fallen apart and so broken down. And I was very grateful that I was able to bring them in. Well, a typical day is to get up and have breakfast. I have two different ladies, Indonesian ladies, Adventists, that come and split the week here. And they fix my breakfast in the morning. And in the afternoon, we walk down the park and sit out in the sun for a while and walk back. And until just very recently, I would go over to Drayson, a health center, and work out on the machines over there.
Way to go. The Drayson Center is the gym at Loma Linda University. On today's show, we'll talk to the lead investigator of the Adventist Health Study 2, which is based at Loma Linda University. We have a tasty treat, some exercises with Sean, and next up, the news. In the headlines today, cardiovascular risk factors double on non-vegetarian diet, less obesity and metabolic syndrome with tree nuts, not peanuts, and vegan diet, less hypothyroidism. There are sizable cardiovascular advantages to a vegetarian diet, even for African-American members of the Adventist Health Study too. A subset of almost 600 black men and women who were enrolled in this study were assessed based on dietary patterns. When compared with non-vegetarians, the vegetarians and vegans had half the risk of obesity, hypertension, diabetes, elevated cholesterol, and LDL cholesterol. The lower weight associated with a vegetarian diet appears to be the link for lower rates of hypertension and diabetes. So cut your risk and go vegetarian today. According to the Adventist Health Study too, tree nuts appear to be strongly protective for obesity and somewhat so for metabolic syndrome. A subset of Adventist Health Study 2 participants was categorised according to tree nut and peanut consumption. There were four groups: low tree nut, low peanut, low tree nut, high peanut, high tree nut, high peanut, and high tree nut, low peanut. Using low tree nut, low peanut as a baseline, obesity was significantly lower in those who were high tree nut consumers, but the winners were high tree nut, low peanut eaters. They were more likely to have a normal weight. Eating tree nuts every day is a great way to get your protein, fiber, and healthy fats, but go steady on peanuts and peanut butter. Following a vegan diet tends to be associated with a lower risk of developing hypothyroidism. These are the findings of the Adventist Health Study 2 during 6 years of study. Compared with non-vegetarians, vegans tended to have less risk, while lacto-ovo-vegetarians tended to have more risk of becoming hypothyroid. Being female, white, and having a higher education were all predictors for hypothyroidism. Overweight increased the odds by 30% and obesity by 80%. So keep your weight within normal limits, especially if you have a family history of underactive thyroid. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Back in 1958, the Adventist Mortality Study began documenting the health advantage that Seventh-day Adventists enjoy. That was followed by the 15-year Adventist Health Study 1 and now Adventist Health Study 2, which began in 2002. So to learn more, we met Dr. Gary Fraser, cardiologist and epidemiologist at our Loma Linda studio in California. As the lead investigator, he's devoted more than 25 years of his career researching Adventist health. I asked him if these studies have shown that Adventists really do live longer, and by how much.
They do, and that's, of course, received a lot of publicity over the last 7 or 8 years. In fact, we were amazed when we first of all did some detailed life table calculations and found, this was in California, of course, this was in Adventist Health Study 1. We haven't really looked at that in Adventist Health Study 2 yet, but of course we will, and we're about to actually compare regions of the country, which will be quite interesting. But in California, we found that the Adventists were living 4 to 7 years longer on average, but we also managed to demonstrate that the average Adventist was losing about 5 years of life compared to what they could have gained by the bad choices that they made. So, you know, not all Adventists live the perfect life. We know that.
What were the things that impacted lifespan?
Well, there were five things that we looked at, and that was whether or not you're a vegetarian, whether or not you ate nuts regularly, small quantities most days, whether you had ever been a past smoker, whether you exercised vigorously with some regularity, and whether you were careful with your body weight, not too thin, not overweight. Those five things, they were the main things that we could identify at that time. I'm quite sure they're not the only things that matter, but they were what we had measured adequately and that we could demonstrate seemed to make a difference. In fact, each of those made about 2 years of difference. So if you looked at the extremes, there was a 10-year gap. But in fact, the choices that most Adventists made, even though they were much better than those of their neighbours, still left them kind of in the middle of that range of years gained, which was interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm. Now, you mentioned weight, and here in America, of course, we're in the midst of the obesity epidemic, and there are so many diets out there, and I can think of, you know, a couple at least that promote heavy use of animal protein.
Right.
But you're looking at a group that at least half of your subjects are not using any. What can you tell us about weight? And you know, did it show anything with weight?
Yes, dramatic differences. And the vegetarians, in a word, are much lighter. And particularly the vegans, the strict vegetarians, which was not a surprise because we had found similar things in HS1. A big study of vegetarians in the United Kingdom had demonstrated the same thing. Interestingly, in that study, the vegans in the UK were quite similar in weight to the vegans here, not much difference. But the non-vegetarians in the US were much heavier than the non-vegetarians. So for those perhaps listeners who understand what a BMI is, which is a little technical, but there's a 5-unit difference, which is huge. And that translates to about 30 pounds in weight for an average height person, man or woman, between the vegans and the non-vegetarians. All of these people were Adventists. So it appears that even though these are diets that are not low-protein diets, in fact, the protein consumption of all of our dietary patterns was surprisingly quite similar, but they were very low in animal protein, and yet they still were associated with a huge decrement in body weight.
So, so their protein intake was similar, but what about fat intake?
Fat intake was also not dramatically different across the groups. The Adventists don't really have a low-fat diet, not in the sense of, for instance, an Ornish diet or diets like that, that may be, say, 10% of calories. We're usually in the mid-20s up to about 30% in total fat, but probably have a little bit more unsaturated fat and less saturated fat, particularly the vegetarian groups, but not low-fat diets.
And so that weight difference, is it to do with calories? Is it to do with physical activity? What? How do you explain that?
It's an interesting question, and you know, we really don't understand the physiology of obesity very well, despite all of the research. We don't think it's due to calories. At least the vegans don't seem to be eating a whole lot less than the non-vegetarians. And I think that there's increasing interest in some aspects of the quality of diet that might change the body's metabolism in ways that reduce body weight. Physical activity is also important, of course, but again, our strict vegetarians or vegans were exercising a little bit more than the others, but not really enough to account for the difference in BMI. So it's a very interesting question that I think will receive a whole lot more attention.
And it's a good point that you bring out there, that it's not the quantity as much as the quality that we need to worry about.
It seems like that's an important part of the puzzle that's been somewhat neglected up to this point.
And of course, you know, I should say we do need to worry about the quantity of food that we eat, but we forget about the quality so often.
That's right.
So, and what about the central obesity? You know, everyone's interested in losing the tummy fat. Was central obesity or waist circumference very different between the groups?
Well, we did measure that, and unfortunately, we've only looked at that yet in black subjects. But there it was very different. We looked at waist size, basically, and adjusted for height and so forth. And we found that the vegetarians were similar, different categories of vegetarians, but there was a big jump in waist size up to the non-vegetarians, who were much bigger around the middle.
So they were perhaps a step up with the BMI, but a bigger step up with waist circumference. Is that what you're saying? So they weren't just heavier.
Probably about equal steps. The BMI was a pretty big step too.
After the break, we have what's got to be the healthiest snack in the world. But first, what's on order today?
Here's your prescription.
What, a plant-based diet for my heart disease, doctor?
It will help your body repair and reverse the damage.
But, doctor, a plant-based diet is hard.
Not as hard as if you don't.
Well, what could happen?
Well, you see, if you don't, I may have to do open heart surgery where we take a saw and we open your breastbone, strip the veins out of your legs, and replace the arteries in your heart.
You're not touching my breastbone with that saw, doc.
Well, what do you think about the plant-based diet then?
Well, I think it's great. Give me a carrot.
There you go. There's what you want. Now, about the physical activity.
I wanted to talk to you about that, Doc. I can't do it.
Why not?
Well, I work into the night. I'm tired when I get home. And there's a couple of television shows that I just can't miss. There's Facebook time, computer, texting. I just don't have time. I'm sorry.
But, you know, it's harder
bigger diabetes if you don't do it.
Well, what do you mean? What could happen?
Well, you can get pins and needles constantly in your feet, and then they go numb.
Oh, well, I've already got that already, so forget the exercise.
But with diet and exercise, you can actually reverse that and get the feeling back in your feet.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. That's not all.
What's not all?
Well, if your diabetes progresses and you get a foot ulcer, it doesn't heal, and then you get gangrene, then I'd have to use this saw to do an amputation.
Oh, you're awful saw-happy, Doc. Get those things away from me.
Many diabetics also become impotent.
Okay, I'll exercise.
Great. You can pay with lifestyle change now or pay with surgery later. It's your choice. Doctor's orders.
With Phil in the kitchen. Phil, what have you got for us today?
Well, I have a guilty admission to you.
Really?
I know it's not as healthy, but I like to eat while I watch TV. And so I brought something that I like to eat while I watch TV. It's a healthy alternative.
Right. Many people like to watch a snack when they're watching TV. So this is the healthiest snack in the world, I call it.
Yes. This is kale chips. So basically what we need is 12 ounces of curly kale, and we need 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of sea salt, and 3 tablespoons of nutritional yeast.
Nice.
It's very simple.
Yes.
So what we're doing, I just want to show our viewers, we want to take the stems off of our kale, and it's a very easy thing to do. You just want to grab it, give it a good pinch, and then pull it, and you've got the stem off of your kale. And just to make this easier, we're going to rip it into a few parts so that the pieces aren't too big. So we've got that. We've got our bowl of kale that's right here.
I want to try this. Oh, that's easy.
It's a lot of fun, right?
It is. That's more fun than buying it all washed and tore up.
Exactly right. And this way you know exactly what's been done to it. It's a better way to do it.
Yeah.
So we have our oil in a bowl. We've got our salt. And then I'm just going to squeeze a little bit of lemon juice into it. And this is what we're going to use to basically baste our kale. We're going to hold our nutritional yeast for the time being.
Okay.
Because that's going to come in a little bit later. And I'm going to ask for your help. If you could pour this on our kale, I'm going to mix it around so that we can get it on the different leaves.
Oof, sorry, I missed.
Now we know that I can take on the nutritional yeast now.
Yes, that's right.
If you could pour on some more. Now what we want to do is just try and get this on all of the kale leaves so that the nutritional yeast will stick to it.
Right.
Oops, I lost a piece.
Man overboard.
That one survived.
You ready for the nutritional yeast flakes now?
Yes.
You're pretty wet.
And as you know, I love getting my hands wet and
doing
it at the kitchen.
You do.
So this is a great recipe and it's a fun thing, especially with kids. Kids love to really get involved in the food.
Yep. And kale is one of those brassicas. It's got those potent anti-cancer properties. And wow, what better way to get your phytonutrients than as a snack that is so healthy.
Now, we're sprinkling on nutritional yeast, and there are a lot of people that confuse it for brewer's yeast.
Oh, yeah. That's a bad mistake to make. Believe me, I've done it. When I first started using it, I tried using brewer's yeast. Ooh, this is much more tasty. And they're both pride products of the brewing industry, but they have a lot of B vitamins, so this is really good for the nervous system.
And it gives it a good sort of cheesy, nutty flavor.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
I love this on popcorn, on anything like that. It's a terrific topping.
It is. Yep, it is. Okay, you look like you're coming to the end.
I think we're good.
Now, I see you've got a dehydrator here, so these must be... The one problem I have with making kale chips is I end up burning them in the oven because you have to watch them like a hawk because they go from uncooked to burned in a second.
It's almost like you need to basically be there right in the oven as it's baking in order to pull it away. This is actually a great thing because that'll be great. You basically want to put this in for 2 to 4 hours. You don't have to worry about burning it. It's not going to burn. You're not going to have that charred taste or look. It's really just going to do the job, make it crispy and retain that flavor. And you don't have to worry about, it's kind of like that foolproof.
Right. Yeah, perfect. And the other thing about using a dehydrator is if you keep the temperature low and do it for 4 hours, you're going to maintain a lot more of your vitamins if you keep it below, say, 115. So on a dehydrator like this, you get to adjust the temperature. And is this how it comes out? So all of that will come down to this because it shrinks.
That's exactly right. It shrinks down. It comes out to that. We saved our viewers from having to listen to us talk for the 2 to 4 hours that we need to while we were doing it. And so we did this ahead of time just so the viewers could see exactly what it looks like.
You know, while we've got the dehydrator here, I just want to show you a little trick. You can use, if you have a dehydrator or you buy one, you can make the most wonderful dehydrated bananas. And unlike the banana chips that you get in the store that are full of, well, they're deep fried and then they've got sugar added, is you can just do your own bananas this way. And you just stick your finger in the end of the banana here, and what it does is it breaks into segments, and they will just lay on your dehydrator in thirds. That's how the banana naturally divides. And then you'd want to do those for a couple of days. But a great way to make your own wholesome dried fruit, no added fat, no added sugar. Well, thanks, Phil. Let's get into these kale chips. I'm off to watch some TV. Bye. No, that's a great recipe. I love it. You're right, it doesn't have that burned flavor.
Oh, it's much easier.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Now back to 102-year-old Herb. We asked him what advice he has for young people.
Well, I think, of course, basically is to have a relationship with Christ. Christ came, as he tells us, to bring us life, and that more abundant. He brings a more abundant life. So if you want the best, choose the abundant. Why take something less? That would be my first thought to any young person. Oh, well, outside of getting married, which is pretty important, I think working for the church, especially in the literature ministry of the church. I have 25 years of working for the church. 12 years working in the church, in a trust department of the church. 25 years in the literature ministry of the church. I was leader, associate leader, in the Pacific Union Conference, the Colporter Ministry. People don't know what the word Colporter means. A Colporter is a French word, and it identifies people that go house to house selling literature. They're called Colporters. In France. It's a French word.
The Seventh-day Adventist Church has publishing houses around the world. When Herb worked as a colporter for the church, he means that he sold these books door to door. His listings would have included children's storybooks, gospel books, prophecy, and health literature. Adventist Health Study 2 is sponsored by the National Cancer Institute of the NIH, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the World Cancer Research Fund. And although its focus is on cancer, cardiovascular disease is the number one killer in America. So I asked Dr. Fraser what the Adventist Health Study has told us about blood pressure, since it is an important risk factor for heart attacks and strokes.
Well, we've recently published actually on that question on white subjects, and we've just got another publication on black subjects submitted. So we've looked at it quite carefully. And again, we're finding the same old story, that the vegetarians as a group have lower blood pressures, and they have only about half of the rate of hypertension, which is high blood pressure, which we defined as 140 over 90 or greater, or being on medicine that someone had already found that they were hypertensive. So both in black subjects and in white subjects, we find that the vegetarians are doing better. And we don't exactly know all the reasons, but again, it seems that factors like potassium and magnesium and some of the minerals in the diet, there's evidence that they seem to have some impact on blood pressure. And there's a lot more of those in vegetable products and fruits, of course, than the meats.
Right, and I'm thinking we were just talking about weight as well, because weight will also factor in, but 50%, that is profound.
It is, particularly in the African Americans, where there's such an epidemic, of course, of hypertension.
Mm. Mm. That sounds like a quick fix for hypertension, is to switch to a vegetarian diet, and because you can do that overnight. What about differences in cholesterol levels? Did you find that cholesterol was different between these groups?
Yes, really quite similar results. The vegans and the lacto-ovos had significant decrements in the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, that were very easy to show. And we would kind of expect that. Interestingly, the pesco vegetarians did not, as compared to the non-vegetarians, which was bit of a surprise, but on the other hand, the omega-3 fatty acids do not affect the LDL cholesterol, maybe not so surprising. Again, body weight may have a little bit to do with it. It affects LDL cholesterol, but it's probably more the added fiber in the vegetarian diets and also the lack of saturated fat that one gets from animal products particularly. Because our lacto-ovo vegetarians, some people might wonder if they're going to major in the dairy products. And we wondered that too. But it turns out that the dairy that they eat actually sits about halfway between the dairy of the non-vegetarians and the vegans, who of course have none. So our lacto-ovo are actually low dairy.
Oh, right. Oh, this is so fascinating, looking at these groups. And what about Adventist Health Study 1 looked at coronary heart disease, didn't it? And what was found there in the relationship with diet?
We did not look at the dietary patterns in exactly this way, but we found strong relationships with meat consumption. And it was interesting that as compared, for instance, to non-Adventists in California at the same time using the same criteria to diagnose heart attack and fatal heart attacks, that the younger Adventists, say less than 70 years of age, Adventists only get old when they're 85, you know, but they had a decrease in heart attacks, again, of somewhere between 50 and 70%. And it seemed like in the younger people, even though heart attacks are uncommon there, they were especially uncommon Adventists. So it was the premature heart attacks that were particularly prevented. Although even up into the 70s and 80s, there was some difference that we could discern.
Fascinating. I wonder what all is going on there. So rolling all that together, we've metabolic syndrome is a number of those factors. So it sounds like, have you looked at metabolic syndrome as a whole with this group? Are you doing that?
Yes, we published about a year ago on that.
Okay.
And exactly as you would expect. Although one aspect of metabolic syndrome is HDL cholesterol, the good cholesterol. The vegetarian diet does not seem to affect that much. It's across the different patterns, it's really very similar. But the other aspects, diabetes, blood pressure, body size, particularly waist circumference, of course, they're all favourable on the vegetarian. So overall, it's favourable.
Okay, we'll come back to diabetes in a minute. Thank you.
Yeah.
This discussion continues right after the break. You've probably heard of the anti-aging compound, resveratrol. It comes from grapes, especially dark Concord grapes. And this grapevine reminds me of something. Jesus, he likened himself to a vine and his followers to its branches. When separated from Christ, a man is no better than this leaf, dry and dead. The sap has stopped flowing. There'll be no flowers, no fruit. Attached to Jesus, we will bear fruit. He's promised it. And the fruit he's talking about is love. There are no limits to his love. Like the sun, those who are nearest are warm and happy. Those farthest away from him, well, they still know his light. And as the branches of the vine entwine around one another, so our relationships will blossom because love flows like sap from him, through us, and on to others. And he offers all this for eternity. That's forever, no aging.
All day long, I solve problems. It's nuts and bolts and grease. And I love it. But at the end of the day, I think about the world's problems. I wonder why we're all here and how it will end. And I found something that makes sense of it all. Takes the nuts and bolts of history and paints a bigger picture. Now, I have hope.
Now it's time to turn your home into a gym again because Sean's here. Hi, Sean.
How you doing?
Good.
So this is our gym today.
Great.
We have medicine balls and we have our sand bells, okay? We're going to work some balance today. Once you involve the resistant ball, you're going to be working balance regardless. If you're ever brave enough, you could take your chair at work and change it out and swap it for one of these.
I do that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It is.
It's good.
But if someone calls you too fast, you may
not all day. Not all day. Just for an hour at a time.
So let's start with some high knees, all right? We're just going to go nice and light. As you get warmed up, you could bring your knees up just a little bit more, but land on the ball of your feet, all right? Use your hands. 3, 2, and 1. We're going to do a side lunge. Come back to the middle. Opposite side. Boom. Here it is. Reach down. Now, we will be working some balance, but still, you got to prepare the body. Right?
Yep.
If you don't prepare the body, you run the risk of injury. And truly, no one really wants an injury.
No, nope, because it's going to put your exercise program way back.
It does. Yep. And you know what? It actually slows you down so much mentally that mental block will slow you up physically. All right, let's twist a little bit because we're going to be twisting. You can keep your hands together or you could space it out a little bit. Make sure you're breathing. And after you finish your dynamic exercises, you should have a little pant, all right? Blood should be flowing, you should be feeling good. Okay, so number one, today I'm gonna play the trainer. I'm gonna pretend like I'm a trainer.
Really?
Yeah.
Just pretend?
And I want you to have a seat. We're gonna use the 8-pound. Remember, these come in 8 pounds, 10, 25. You get them at your local.
I'll shoot for 8
today. Stick with 8, it's kind of. So number one, once you get on the resistant ball, you're working balance, okay? So what I'm gonna try and do is throw you off balance because, yeah, I could tell you to do a press, but you've done a press before. Mm. Let's take it up a notch.
Yeah, we could sit there, both feet down, and take it up the middle.
Yeah.
But you're not gonna do that.
But we're not gonna do that.
No.
So we're gonna put that in the right hand,
and
I want you to grab that sand bell, okay? And what I want you to do is put up this foot right here. Get your balance first, and all I want you to do is press on that side. Work it, all right? The legs are up as high as it can go, okay?
Without
that
falling
off. That core is working, yes. So you're gonna feel like your body's gonna throw you off, but that's what you want. You want your core to work. You wanna be thrown off balance so that your body could adjust and that your core could say, can go, what are you doing to me, all right?
Yeah.
And it could adjust, okay? So that's a good one to work your shoulder. work your balance and your unilateral balance number.
And you're working the leg because you only got one leg on. You're working all your major muscle groups.
I got a trick for you now. You know how that goes. Yeah. So from that position, roll forward. Bring your hips up, almost like a tabletop. And what we're going to do, actually, roll back up that way. I'll change it up on you. Keep the weight right up here. Keep it straight up. And we're going to do that twist all the way to the side. Yes. But I want you to turn all the way. Yes. There it is. There it is. All the way to the side. Come on, turn to me. That shoulder. Yeah. Don't fall on me. Don't fall on me. Come on. Keep that core tight. Hips up. There you go.
He's being
This is not easy.
He's being really mean to
I
us
am not.
Today.
I
hey.
Promise. I am not. Three. Do one more. One more. Yes. And perfect. This is a wonderful exercise to work your balance. Okay? It is. That's not bad.
No. Once you get used to it.
But now stay there. Your glutes are already working. Let's keep it there.
Straight all up. Right.
Straight up. And let's go all the way back. Let's work your lats. Okay? Come all the way up. Bring it to the chest. Press it up. Work your arms. Go ahead. Keep going. All the way. Bring it to the chest. And up. I'm going to give you one more. Go all the way back. And up. Bring it to the chest. Perfect. And up. There you go. Now roll back up. All right? A great way to work the entire body.
Remember to keep breathing when you're doing that one.
If you don't breathe, you get lightheaded and you don't want that. So, not bad at all. It is a challenge.
Not bad for him.
Not bad.
We worked hard, didn't we?
We did, we did. Let's stretch it out real quick. All the way down. Take a nice deep breath. Come up nice and slow. Good job.
Great. Thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome. Good job.
Men, do you want to gain an extra 4 years while looking and feeling great? Researchers in Loma Linda, California found the answer. For men, thinner is better, particularly as you age. The Adventist Health Study looked at men aged 75 to 99 and found the thinner men lived about 4 years longer. A healthy weight, even past the seventh decade of life, made a difference. Maintaining a healthy weight for your entire life is another ageless advantage.
And now it's time for your questions. Mary called. She says, my husband is diabetic. I like to make him cakes and pies. Is agave okay to use for diabetes when it is high in fructose? Well, Mary, I would encourage you to try and limit the use of sweeteners in general. Try to make fresh fruit the sweetest menu item in your home. If you have to use a sweetener, then use stevia, because that's a good choice. It doesn't raise the blood sugars. And remember, it's very, very sweet, about 200 times sweeter than sugar. Agave does have a low glycemic index, so it doesn't cause such a spike in blood sugars, but it does have a bit more fructose. It's sweeter than sugar as well, so use it in moderation. But if you can get away from making cakes and pies, that would be ideal. Vicky asked, how do you encourage your adult daughter to avoid drinking 1 to 2 glasses of wine a day? Will that lead to alcoholism? The media encourages the use of moderate alcohol for relaxation. I'm concerned about the danger of this practice, and do you have any tips? Well, Vicky, I'd be a little bit concerned too, because your daughter, it sounds like she might be in the age group that she could be planning a pregnancy, and we know that there is no safe limit for alcohol in pregnancy, or even they're now saying in the several months before pregnancy. And at the volume she's drinking, 1 to 2 glasses a day, that carries more than a doubling of the risk of breast cancer to her herself. So risk for pregnancy, risk of breast cancer, and actually 11% of all cancers come from ingesting alcohol. So breast cancer is really common, 1 in 8 women get it, so why increase the risk? And if you choose to never drink, then you can never become a problem drinker. The other thing, on today's show, we're featuring some of the world's longevity all-stars, and they don't drink alcohol. Someone else called and asked, what foods do you recommend for a lady trying to eat healthfully but wanting to gain weight? This is a great question. Research now shows that people who are underweight with a BMI of less than 18 are actually more likely to die than those who are even overweight or obese. So it's really important to get your BMI up between 19 and 25. But you don't want to do that using unhealthy foods. Eat more fat, more protein. For example, you might want to have the fat and protein as a quarter of a cup of nuts, tree nuts rather than peanuts. Increase avocados, increase your olives, have more legumes and grains. And be sure to build muscle by doing muscle strengthening exercises 3 days a week at least. Hope that helps with your problem. And most people are trying to lose weight, but I know some of you out there are wanting to put it on. So think healthy when you're trying to put weight on. Thanks for those questions. Leave them at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can text, or if you're calling from overseas, it's 301-960-5144. You can email via the website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. And of course, post Facebook or tweet them to me. Now, let's see what it's at the grocers today. Onions are the third most consumed vegetable in the United States. They are so versatile, great for breakfast, casseroles, barbecues, and even holiday dinners. They give flavor, color, and texture to a wide variety of dishes and cuisines. 87% of the United States onion crop are yellow. They're a great, reliable standby for cooking almost anything. 8% of the crops are red onions, and with their wonderful flavor and color, it's a good choice for roasting or for fresh. White onions make up just 5% of the US onion crop, and they're used in salads, white sauces, and they're the traditional onion for classical Mexican cuisine. And because they're one of the top 10 antioxidant veggies, be sure to have some most days. Bon appetit. Today's interview is with Dr. Gary Fraser in our Loma Linda, California studio. We're talking about the Adventist Health Study. Before the break, he told us that diabetes, blood pressure, BMI and waist circumference were all lower in vegetarians. Most people focus on sugar intake to prevent diabetes, so I asked Dr. Fraser to explain the relationship between a vegetarian diet and diabetes.
Well, probably overwhelmingly body size. One of the biggest risk factors that we know of for diabetes is being overweight. Mm-hmm. The insulin just doesn't work so well and it places stress on the pancreas. At least this is for the adult form of diabetes, we call diabetes 2. Mm-hmm. And so it was really no surprise that we found a huge benefit in terms of diabetes, both in black subjects and in white subjects. Wow. There's a little bit of evidence also that saturated fat and animal products are a risk factor for diabetes, and of course we benefit in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. So what was the difference between vegetarian and non-vegetarian? What was the rate of diabetes?
It was about a 40% deficit. Wow. in the vegetarian. So again, very large. There's obviously an epidemic of diabetes that goes along with the obesity in this country, particularly in children, actually, although we were not looking at children.
I'm thinking, you know, we know that fat is actually inflammatory. So have you looked at inflammatory disease like arthritis in these subjects?
A little bit. We published a paper a number of years ago that we couldn't really distinguish rheumatoid arthritis or particular kinds of arthritis, but it was any kind of self-reported rheumatism and arthritis. And the picture almost gets boring. The vegetarians had about a 30% decrement that was statistically significant. Mm. We have thought about looking at rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis, but it's actually rather hard to do that based on a questionnaire only to make the diagnosis.
Sure. Yes. The big C, cancer. What have you found with both studies in terms of cancer? Have you teased anything out there?
Meat, red meat particularly, seems to be a cause of a number of cancers or causally involved. Particularly colorectal cancer, that's the one where there's agreement across many studies, and certainly ours is no exception. Mm-hmm. We also found some evidence that red meat might be an adverse factor in bladder cancer and ovarian cancer. We found that a number of the fruits and vegetables seem to be protective against different cancers. The problem with cancer, of course, is not one disease. Mm. Each cancer in different parts of the body is almost a different disease, and they have different kind of epidemiology, different causal pathways sometimes. In Adventist Health Study 2, we're only having our first preliminary looks at that, and probably our main findings will come out in about a year. But we're already finding, looking at the dietary patterns, that the vegans look to be doing well, having significant protection, not huge, but probably about 15%. Lacto-ovos, also somewhat protected, a little less. And when we looked, we haven't looked at specific cancers, but we clustered cancers together in organ systems.
Okay.
And it seemed like we looked at gastrointestinal cancers, both the lactose and the vegans. In fact, most of the vegetarian groups may be having quite a significant deficit, about 25%.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but really, the main findings will come out in about a year. But the vegetarians as a whole all seem to be doing better than the non-vegetarians. One can say that even at this point.
Now, you mentioned soy, that these groups eat a lot of soy.
Yes.
Soy, there's been a lot of controversy around prostate cancer, breast cancer. Can you tell us anything about soy and those diseases?
Right. In Adventist Health Study 1, we found some evidence that soy milk might be protective against prostate cancer. The relationship between soy intake and breast cancer in our study, in Adventist Health Study 1, was not entirely clear, although it was in the direction of protection. But Adventist Health Study 2 is designed in a major way to look exactly at that relationship. And so we've put a great deal of effort into measuring soy intake very carefully. We have a whole 2 pages of commercial products and so forth. So we're well set up to look at that, but we'll have to wait till we have enough cancers that develop.
Of course.
Before we have the sufficient power to do that. So again, give us about a year.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
After the break, we'll hone in on specific food items that prevent cancer. So stand by.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Herb has had a full life and it's not over yet. We asked him whether he holds a current driver's license.
When it comes to driving, I still drive, and I've just had a renewal of my license for 5 years. Well, I don't know exactly what to say on a goal. I just get up thankful for the day. I like to read. I like to get out and exercise when I can. And I enjoy fellowship and the church particularly. It's the Sabbath is very important to me. It's a very beautiful happening. One day out of the seven that we can communicate entirely with God. We can have fellowship with others who are also keeping the Sabbath and loving God. And The Sabbath brings great rest and restoration. I'm very grateful for the Sabbath. Well, I suppose the biblical statement, the blessed hope, I just hope that God will, that Christ will come soon. He came to say that I could have life more abundant, and I'm grateful for that, and I hope that I can have life eternal eventually through Christ. I'm grateful for his love, and I think it's a joy to share it.
And I'm grateful for God's love too. What a testimony. With 96,000 participants, the Adventist Health Study 2 is one of the largest and most comprehensive studies of diet and cancer in the world. So I asked lead investigator Dr. Fraser about the benefits of fruit and vegetables from the study.
Well, it's a little bit controversial, but I think when you put all of the studies together, you come up with a pretty clear indication that fruits and vegetables are as a group, are protective against many of the cancers. Mm-hmm. And I think there's general consensus about that. Of course, they're not likely to be all equal.
Right.
Some families of fruits are going to be more effective than others, and similarly for the vegetables. For instance, there's quite a lot of interest in the brassica vegetables, the cabbage, the broccoli, that they contain certain chemicals that stimulate enzymes in our liver to detoxify carcinogens, similarly for some of the allium vegetables like onions.
Mm.
The fruits, of course, are packed with antioxidant substances, other chemicals.
Mm.
Also, they have, both fruits and vegetables, an awful lot of fiber, non-nutritive
right.
substance, which appears also to be protective against a number of cancers, particularly gastrointestinal cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the goals that we have set ourselves in Adventist Health Study 2, of course, is to try and unpack that a little bit further and see if we can understand which families of fruits and vegetables are more important.
Right. Well, it sounds like you set yourselves up for a success just by what you've been telling us. Now, what about whole grains? Are you looking at that and what? Any data yet? Any evidence for a benefit there?
Well, in Adventist Health Study 1, along with a number of other studies, we found fairly clear evidence that whole grains as compared to refined grains were protective against heart disease. And we found, for instance, as an example, that the Adventists that preferred whole grain bread had considerably less heart disease than Adventists who ate white bread, adjusting for other differences in their diet and lifestyle.
Wow, that simple thing.
Simple thing, and that's not unique. There's been a number of other studies that have found that.
Mm.
As far as other major problems related to whole grains, almost certainly some of the cancers are going to have some relation with that, and there's some evidence about that already, perhaps again because whole grains, of course, are a great source of fiber. And not all fibers are identical in their effect. You have fibers
right.
from fruit and whole grains, but that of whole grains seems to be particularly effective actually against a number of chronic diseases.
Mm. Mm. And legumes, excluding soy, the legumes, where do they fall? Are they got data there?
We have lots of data. Again, it's we haven't looked at it all yet.
Right.
We did find in Adventist Health Study 1 a rather interesting finding, that legumes seem to be protective against colon cancer. Remember I said that red meat seemed to be increased risk.
Mm.
Legumes seem to act in the opposite direction. And there also seemed to be a complex relationship that the legumes were particularly effective in the high meat eaters to help reduce their risk, whereas in the vegetarians it didn't seem to make much difference, perhaps because they didn't have much hazard going on from the meat they're eating and not eating at the same time. Whether we'll find the same again in Adventist Health Study 2, I don't know, but we're sure going to look into that again.
You know, one thing people often think about, if you're vegetarian, they assume that you'll have some nutritional deficiencies.
Right.
So have you done any work around that, looking for perhaps nutrients that were low or perhaps too low in vegetarian diets?
Yes, a little bit. Of course, nutritional deficiencies in terms of nutritional diseases, and you know, one thinks of rickets and scurvy and so forth, they're really things of the past.
Right.
So a lot of these things are really just numbers, and one is not quite sure how clinically important they are, although there are some exceptions. And, of course, one of those that's very important in the strict vegetarians or the vegans is vitamin B12. And it's very clear that vegans do need to supplement, and they can get into big trouble if they don't. There are some concerns about one or two other nutrients, such as vitamin D, and omega-3 fatty acids, but again, I think the evidence that they're important as a possible source of deficiency in the vegans is much less secure. Other than those, I would say that vegetarians have no more problems than any other person in society. And in fact, we've looked at that fairly carefully, and that seems to be the case.
Okay, so vitamin B12, vitamin D, and omega-3s.
For the strict vegetarian.
For the strict vegetarian.
And remember that vitamin D, unless you're living kind of on the far north or the south, most of it comes from sun exposure. Anyhow, not so much what you eat.
True. Now, I'm just thinking about trends, you know. The Adventists in Loma Linda were labelled the blue zones.
Right.
What's the trend in our vegetarianism over time? You know, you've been involved in studies that have spanned decades. So what are we doing as a group, as a people group?
You know, our studies can't answer that directly because the kind of people that chose to join Adventist Health Study 1 might have been a little bit selected. It may not reflect the average Adventist. And this kind of people that joined Adventist Health Study 2 may have the same selection. But one interesting finding that we have found, if we follow the same people over 30, 40, 50 years, we find that as people are getting older, they're changing, and they're changing in the direction of vegetarianism.
Fascinating. Well, thank you so much. We've run out of time, but it's been great having you on the show.
Thank you.
So if you want a 10-year advantage in years and a huge bonus in health, eat nuts every day, don't smoke, and be vegetarian. Maintain a normal weight and have regular physical activity. If controlling your weight is a problem, remember that vegans are on average 30 pounds lighter than non-vegetarians. So it's about quality, not just the quantity of food that you eat. And it's not just the weight advantage. Vegetarians have far fewer heart attacks, especially when they're young. They have less diabetes and less hypertension. And hopefully, you'll be singing the praises of God for 100 years, in preparation for singing them on the streets of gold one day. On the next show, we'll be looking at longevity and the brain. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you then.